Chapter 2. 8 men and 2 women walk in a line along the right side of the Tet Control Center. They are protected by a plexiglass wall because they've been in quarantine for the last 12 days. The techs rise from behind their computers and applaud. That much is tradition, but today there's also cheering. There will be more applause and cheers from the 1,500 Tet employees. The patches on their shirts, jackets, and coveralls identify them as the Tet rocket jockeys outside. Any manned space mission is an event, but this one is extra special. Second from the end of the line is a woman with her long hair, now gray, tied back in a ponytail that's mostly hidden beneath the high collar of her pressure suit. Her face is unwrinkled and still beautiful, although there are fine lines around her eyes and at the corners of her mouth. Her name is Gwendy Peterson. She's 64, and in less than an hour, she will be the first sitting U.S. senator to ride a rocket to the new MF-1 space station. There are cynics among Gwendy's political peers who like to say MF stands for a certain incestuous sex act, but it actually stands for many flags. The crew are carrying their helmets for the time being, so 9 of them have a free hand to wave, acknowledging the cheers. Gwendy, technically a crew member, can't wave unless she wants to wave the small white case in her other hand. And she doesn't want to do that. Instead of waving, she calls, "We love you and thank you! This is one more step to the stars!" The cheers and applause redouble. Someone yells, "Gwendy for president!" A few others take up the call, but not that many. She's popular, but not that popular. Especially not in Florida, which went red, again, in the last general election. The crew leaves the building and climbs into the 3-car tram that will take them to Eagle Heavy. Gwendy has to crane her neck all the way to the reinforced collar of her suit to see the top of the rocket. "Am I really going up in that?" she asks herself, and not for the first time. In the seat next to her, the team's tall, sandy-haired biologist leans toward her. He speaks in a low murmur.
"There's still time to back out. No one would think the worse of you."
Gwendy laughs. It comes out nervy and too shrill. "If you believe that, you must also believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy."
"Fair enough," he says. "But never mind what people would think. If you have any idea, any at all, that you're going to freak out and start yelling, 'Wait, stop, I've changed my mind,' when the engines light up, then call it off now. Because once those engines go, there's no turning around, and no one needs a panicked politician on board. Or a panicky billionaire, for that matter."
He looks to the car ahead of them, where a man is bending the ear of the ops commander. In his white pressure suit, the man bears a resemblance to the Pillsbury Doughboy. The 3-car tram starts to roll. Men and women in coveralls applaud them on their way. Gwendy puts the white case down and holds it firmly between her feet. Now she can wave. "I'll be fine." She's not entirely sure of that, but tells herself she has to be. Has to. Because of the white case. Stamped in raised red letters on both sides are the words, "Classified Material."
"How about you?"
The bio guy smiles, and Gwendy realizes that she can't remember his name. He's been her training partner for the last 4 weeks. Only minutes ago, they back-checked each other's suits before leaving the holding area, but she can't remember his name. This is NG, as her late mother would have said. Not good.
"I'll be fine. This'll be my 3rd trip, and when the rocket starts to climb and I feel the G-force pressing down, speaking just for myself, it's the best orgasm a boy ever had."
"Thank you for sharing," Gwendy says. "I'll be sure to put it in my first dispatch to the down below." It's what they call Earth, the down below. She remembers that. But what's Bio Boy's damn name? In the pocket of her jumper, she's got a notebook with all sorts of info in it, not to mention a very special bookmark. The names of all the crew members are in there, but no way can she get at the notebook now. And even if she could, it might, almost certainly would, raise suspicions. Gwendy falls back on the technique Dr. Ambrose gave her. It doesn't always work, but this time, it does. The man next to her is tall, square-jawed, blue-eyed, and has a tumble of sandy hair. The women think he's hot. What's hot? Fire's hot. If you touch it, you might get up. Burn, that's his name. Burn Stapleton. Professor Burn Stapleton, who also happens to be Major Burn Stapleton, retired.